Can we start over? That was bad.
It was good. You think
that was bad, disaster. Dude.
All of this is bad, but I'm gonna be able to edit it and make us sound like less like idiots.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah, don't worry. I'm not gonna. This is the first episode, and it's gonna be rough.
I am honored to be the snowplow like strapped to the front of this train, which is of course a diesel train, the only proper type of train.
Welcome to the first episode of Building Socialism. My name is Nick Hayes. I'm a filmmaker. I live in Detroit and I'm like a producer out here. And I also like work with Street Fight Radio and sometimes Chapo Trap House on doing their video stuff. Like we just shot a Halloween special in New York City that's on Vimeo for $2.99 that people can check out. So I edited that and produced that and shot it with Donald Borenstein, who's our guest today. So this was actually recorded before we shot the show together, before I went out to New York. But yeah, basically we talk a little bit about working in production, and then we also talk a little bit about, you know, just the emerging scene of video stuff on the left and kind of creating a passive media that people can watch to sort of like relax and not have to like think so hard. And like there really isn't a like kind of a TV form or some sort of thing like that on the left that's like a passive medium to have that perspective. So yeah, I think it's a interesting little episode. It's like 20 minutes. So Donald Borenstein. Would you mind kind of like talking about some of the different things you've done to like someone who's maybe not familiar with your work?
Yeah, well, first of all, Nick, thank you for having me on. The big thing I've done mostly is posting online. That's my big thing. I'm at the front lines of the content wars.
Yeah, no, it's so funny like hearing about like the New York scene. So like living in Detroit, the production scene and like working in film is so different because it's like there's like 15 of us and it's like we're able to accommodate like high-end commercial production, but it's just like a very small scene. And like I hear about like from friends who are like run companies or who are in companies in New York, and like they'll post a job for like an associate producer and they'll just get like 4,000 submissions in like 2 days, and it's like,
oh my god. Yeah. It's interesting with Detroit because like here it's so crowded with people who are just trying to get by to survive. It's kind of hard. There's a ton of unpaid gigs and it's hard to get people to actually pay you fairly. People really ratchet down the price and people are forced to undercut each other for jobs, which I'm not gonna lie, when I first started out I did that, like not to an extreme degree, but like
you have
I
to.
Did, and it was fucked up. And it's when you're just desperate to get traction, you know, I get it, and I did it, and it's hard, but it sets a precedent and it becomes very hard to get a fair pay. Like only finally after, I think I started like doing freelance gigs in some capacity in 2014, and only finally now I'm getting like gigs with like relatively fair pay.
I think a lot about how like the production sort of like the way productions are run is just based on like exploitation of labor and like dangerous working conditions basically. Like it's insane. Like it's I just finished 3 days of working 12 to, you know, I mean, I'd work a shoot that was 12 hours and then, you know, I still have to go to a meeting after and I have to send things out after. And there's like, you know, additional things. So it's just like, you know, from 5 a.m. to 11 p.m. at night, you're on call working. And it's just like, you know, that's an insane sort of working standard. But you have people within the sort of production community that are so excited and happy to be like working in film that the idea of like pushing back in any way against production or like executive producers and things feels like to be not thankful enough or like undeserving or something.
Yeah, I mean it's hard because I felt that pressure too. Like you don't want to, at the end of the day you need to take home something, especially when you don't like really know what's coming next in terms of jobs. So it's really stressful. But that's the thing I think that's interesting about Detroit versus how it is in New York, then it sounds like, because it people can actually form a community there that has a shared interest.
Yeah. And you hear stories from like older people about, like, I've heard stories from older camera assistants where they're like, you know, there was like six ACs that were really working in Detroit. And we all just said we weren't going to come out for less than $700 a day or $650 a day, which is like, sounds like a lot to people maybe who don't work in production, but you're not working that many days a month. And there's like a lot of technical knowledge you have to have. And the days are super grueling and there's a lot.
And prep work too. You have to study.
Right.
Like those kinds of shoots, you legitimately have to study. And that's something I don't think is considered in that. Is that, I guess, for like, you know, with graphic design and photography too, with, you know, even with like web development, especially with writing, especially research time and strategy time is almost never factored into scope of pay or consideration on deadlines. And that's mostly because people who have the money to pay for this stuff in any capacity don't actually care about that. To take it from the shitty capitalist standpoint, even, they're bad at being shitty capitalists. Because they're undermining their own thing. You know, they're undermining their own content because instead of it becoming something people actually want to invest themselves in, and if they click, they're more likely to stay with, it becomes something that becomes more of an impulsive or accidental or scroll-by impression. I am a recent escapee of a tech copywriting industry thing, so it's... I know way too much about this shit.
The agency shit's grueling too, though. You know, like, from what I see on the agency level, it's like, I mean, it's basically like, when I think of production, it's like grueling expectations, and you're working with, and like, a lot of time, agency people who are just like mean and like trying to fuck with you and undermine you at every turn. And but then it's like, I can't imagine going into an office every day and like having to live that shit. Like, that sounds terrible. Like, I just work maybe like a week a month, and then I'm having to like drum up work kind of the rest of the month, but like to go into an office 9 to 5.
I worked in the agency side in copywriting, basically, in content strategy, so more of like that instead of the video end of things, because I went to school, I didn't go to film, I went to school for environmental policy and for history, which I used neither of. Nice. Now.
But you know a lot.
Great
of
job, me.
Background.
I do, and I'm enough to be very angry about things, but not enough to do anything about it. Back to like that, I guess, balance of talent things. I did want to ask about Detroit and the like not so crowded film scene there. How much of that do you think factors into the? I'm not trying to like point fingers or anything like that, but like factors into the inherent inequality of Detroit economically, like the extreme stratification between like the rich suburban areas and like just, you know, much greater lack of resources in, you know, for you know, less you know, less affluent communities. And like, is it like, is there like a big, you know, like gap in demographics in the Detroit scene, I guess, then accordingly, or no?
In the film community, like, is there, I mean, because it's a majority black city, and like you're asking if it's a majority black production in its world, and it's not, and that's because it's totally not, because to work in production, you have to be coming from some level of like wealth, and like, I mean, or some level of like, there's somebody helping you along at some point, or you're, you know, because it's just so unreliable until you're able to get there. And I mean, I had to, you know, like, I would have to turn to different people in my family for short-term loans at points, and like that's the sort of stuff like that's required. And like, I see different like black dudes and like friends from film school and stuff that were like trying to kind of break into the production scene, but it's like I see them unable to make like gear purchases to kind of upgrade like what their value would be as a contractor, or unable to not take on a service job that has hours that are inflexible, so they're unable to take on certain gigs. So it just is kind of like, because with production you have to really throw yourself at it in order to really be successful, I think. Like, it's hard to be working like another job that requires a lot, so it's really not. I mean, there are some people, and like a big thing on my sets is I try to get those people out, but I mean, generally, like, I'm on sets all the time that are all white dudes.
And that's gonna like increase, because Detroit, I mean, I mean, like, Detroit, again, it's like it's starting hitting a gentrification. It's starting to see that surge, right, basically? I mean, I'm not really familiar with, you know, the trendings of like, what's, how things are shifting in Detroit right now. So,
it's, but, I mean, it's a cartoon, basically, dude. It's like a, it's people, I mean, that's offensive, kind of, in like a disrespectful way of referring to it, but it is just more and more like this bizarre caricature of inequality. And like, they just used like $600 million of taxpayer money to build a giant Little Caesars pizza stadium, like where Kid Rock performs.
Holy shit.
And it's just like, it's shit like that. That's like, and it's like the people coming to it are like wearing Confederate flags. And so it's just using black people's money to create these like kind of havens of white supremacy. And it's just like really fucked, man. And it's a crazy place to try to do organizing or like try to get involved in local politics, because it's like a liberal city with, that's just such an example of like neoliberalism and corruption. And like, they're trying to build like there's already a jail downtown, and they're trying to build like another jail downtown. And if it doesn't become a jail, it becomes a soccer stadium. Like, the development situation is like just abhorrent right now in Detroit.
Yeah. Jesus Christ. I mean, it's everywhere, and it's hard because, you know, there's definitely a level of complicity for you and I. I mean, like, you know, I'm moving to Bed-Stuy, and the area I'm going to be in isn't fully gentrified. And it's like this weird thing again where it's, you know, I'm extremely privileged and lucky. Like, I didn't come from wealth, but like, I just, you know, just being a white dude, I can sort of stumble into things with luck.
Totally. Yeah, I just moved into like it's referred to by the Detroit PR department as Mexican Town. It's just like Southwest Detroit. That's literally what they call it. Like, the Detroit PR people came in and named it Mexican Town a while ago, which is just hilarious.
Like how long is a while ago?
Like 4 or 5 years ago. Like, not that long ago. Like, because they're renaming areas now, which is just a classic, right, technique. But so, okay, I want to kind of cover quickly, like how did you go even kind of like find the Chapo guys, and like, what was that content sort of like doing for you that like got you interested in kind of engaging with it?
I've always liked the show, like, even when I've like disagreed with like some of their, you know, decisions, like, you know, using certain words or stuff like that. Like, I've liked the show since the start. It's, you know, I think actually been really effective in channeling the kind of malaise of like online subculture into not like organizing, because they'd be the first to tell you they are a comedy show. They're not a political movement. But that said, I think it was really interesting seeing someone try to take socialism, which I think has been for far too long. No, I mean, it's not been only discussed with a dry, you know, dry kind of tone. But for explicitly political stuff, it's been much harder to find very hard left stuff that's, you know, fits in that kind of vein. And making it for you know, easily accessible and, you know, sort of based around a medium where people are always sort of trying to talk and keep up with the stuff, it was a really good mixture. And I know they did some video stuff with people before us, but like, we thought about it and we're like, Matt and I were like, listen, you know, we might as well ask, see if they got someone to shoot the election night show, because they'd done a couple of live shows. And we just decided to cold pitch them and like, hey, you know, is anyone doing this yet? We'd do it. Let us know. It was a couple of days before the show. So like, we thought like, let's do it. They got back to us and we just got lucky and stumbled into it. And then the night beforehand, I asked Alex Magaro, who's this, you know, really fucking incredible filmmaker, way like he was our ringer for sure. We weren't even planning to do a documentary initially. It was just going to be the live show, and we were going to shoot like some before the show questions, and we figured we'd get some after show reactions, because we figured it was going to be a slow night. They do a show, Hillary wins, there it's over. And we just decided to keep filming once it became clear that things were going to shit, and they were cool with it. And that just kind of came together, I guess. But the point is, don't be afraid to ask. And if there's something you want to try, reach out. Or someone you want to work with, like, there's no harm in reaching out. They might say no. They might say yes. If there's someone, like, if there's an artist whose work connects with you, and you want to do something with them, it's always worth asking, you know?
Yeah, I totally agree. That's exactly like how I have gotten to like anything cool in my life and like worked on anything fun is just like asking, and they're like, oh shit, yeah, like, and I just like, it's, you know, trip over my dick into some sort of cool situation where I'm like with people I find interesting.
That is key though, and I was about to say, to acknowledge that, the tripping over our own dicks, because there is an element there where like we're both white dudes.
Right.
Oh. We have like a lot more leeway totally. On that shit. Like
exactly. Like for instance, I met up with Street Fight for the first time at the Electric Canna Carnival, which is this like bizarre fucking
That was a wild video you did too. I fucking love that. But it was such a that seems such a wild time. It's awesome.
So and it was just like a bizarre scene where like we're on this like speedway. That's in this kind of like town that's been sort of abandoned economically. We're like really close to Flint. Yeah. There's like a lot of people there who are just holding on to like whatever sort of money they're making from like cannabis. So, you know, we've both been kind of coming out with some of these leftist comedy videos, and like there's other people doing shit like, I think kind of, like when I think of other people doing it in the scene, I think of Eric Andre's stuff and I think of Tim Heidecker's stuff. And it being kind of in a different vein because it's not explicitly leftist, but it's kind of like almost there. Like it just feels like maybe there's a clip or two they didn't use or something.
I would argue actually that Tim and Eric, awesome show, great job, is the best critique of capitalism in television, maybe ever. Just of rampant wild consumer capitalism. It is like, it is perfect. It is the only thing that truly captures sort of the insane tone of the scrambled way, you know, sort of like postmodern life and have really kind of warped our sense of reality.
I agree. Like I think absurdism, like I really like Elizabeth Brunig's article about absurdism and how like millennials like it because it tells you exactly what like the universe isn't. You know, or like, yeah. I don't know. I kind of agree with that it is just like it captures that. But I'm curious, like, how you see these videos we're making evolving and like other people jumping in and there being different voices. And like, I feel like there is kind of like an emerging scene there. And it was just interesting talking to Brian and Brett about how they feel like they kind of catalyzed a lot of that. I'm wondering, like, what you see your involvement in that being and like how you see that kind of evolving.
I mean, I don't think I really have an involvement in that scene. I've really only did the Chapo thing, and it's like it's something we're open to. Like we just want to figure out the right way. I think it's, you know, at a point where I'm a big believer in not, at least for the stuff I want to do, not for making money, but for like what I want to, you know, my own work. Mostly my goal is like to not add to the noise. So like I think I doing more comedy stuff and left-wing comedy stuff is something I want to do. I just want to make sure if I do it, or if Matt and I do it, you know, it's something that's adding something new. I think there's meaningful ways to create leftist comedy content that, like, you know, in the same way Chapo galvanized people as a podcast, like, you know, this could reach out to different people who aren't normally receptive to that kind of thing. I think it'd be cool if that developed as a strong scene. Like, you know, you saw Vic Berger do that kind of stuff, you know, not from a leftist perspective, but I guess from a broadly liberal left anti-Trump standpoint, you know, during the election, where he like managed to channel both his sensibilities and his politics into this single cohesive and funny form. And it's something like, not like that style necessarily, but like, I think it'd be really cool if we saw more of that. We're finally starting to have funny, like, leftist perspectives in a way that's popular and noticeable. But, like, it's two extremes. You have tweets and you have podcasts and, like, long-form stuff. And they're both great. Like, I love both. But that middle, that kind of thing that people just sort of scan over, you know, people that people will impulsively watch 3 minutes of, that people will, you know, engage with on a level that is both relaxing and stimulating, you know, politically. That's not there for the left right now, I think. I don't think anybody's really consistently doing that. I know, I'm trying to think. I can't think of, I mean, I know you're like working on stuff and I'm really excited to see what you do with that. And like I guess my view of it is hopeful that that scene will develop in a really strong way. More than anything.
Cool, man. Well, I think we should leave it there. I think that's a good place to cap it.
Yeah. I hope that if you need to do a reshoot on this, I mean, we can. Like, I hope I didn't sound like an idiot at all. I mean, I definitely did. I don't, like, not too bad.
Well, thanks for coming on to my shitty podcast.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me. It was delightful to take a shit on your podcast. Which is obviously my shitty podcast.
It's where you reveal it. You're on the toilet the whole time.
I mean, that's the reverb you're getting in here. It's just that nice bounce off the toilet bowl. God. No, you would hear a lot more grunting and pain. But an hour is about the right time. So that's at least accurate there.
Alright, dude. Well, we'll talk soon about New York. That'll be fun.
Yeah. Alright, sounds good, man. Talk to you soon.
Take care. Have a nice night.
So, thanks for listening to the show. If you're interested in more content like this, I'm going to be like releasing more just conversations with people on my Patreon. And I'm only charging $1 for my Patreon. And you also get access to all sorts of different videos I've done with Chapo Trap House and Street Fight Radio, and videos I've done here in Detroit, you know, about different events like organizers are doing, some different DSA propaganda. I'm like trying to share more works in progress there so people can kind of see like how stuff gets developed. So, you know, I would say check that out. That's only $1. And then if you're looking for other Patreons to support, I would say check out Street Fight Radio. They're awesome. They have a bunch of different tiers. They have Kratom. They have a really dope zine. And then also check out Delete Your Account. They're a really great show. So yeah, thanks for listening, and hope you have a great rest of your day or night or morning or whenever you listen to this.